Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for UFC 260 with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru, here to bring you a breakdown for the main card of UFC 260, Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou, the biggest, baddest, boldest heavyweight fight to have ever take place is going down this Saturday. I am so excited. And not only am I excited for that, we have an esteemed guest here today for our conversation. Schwan himself.
Hello, guys. If you know me on Twitter, it's a Black Jordan Breen. I write for MMA ratings, occasionally for Severe MMA. And I kind of just cover the sport, do breakdowns, analysis. My most recent actually direct MMA piece was talking about the comprehensive look at camps, talking about the things they should do and shouldn't do to help their fighters progress. And outside of that, I do live action breakdowns, like MMA style breakdowns of live action comic book movies, whether it's Captain America, Daredevil, Winter Soldier, and Falcon. Kind of just something interesting for the comic book fans, the MMA fans, kind of toes that line right between it.
Yeah, the jack of all trades, if you will.
That's right. As you can see, I'm in the bathroom. I have four daughters. They take over the house, so I've been reduced to the bathroom now.
That's great. I'm glad you could join us from wherever you're at.
They pay no bills, but I have to go to the bathroom. Obviously, fighting ability means nothing in this house.
Definitely not. Women rule the roost.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
I'm very excited. We're going to do a little bit of a different take this week. We want to cut it down and just focus on the main card of this awesome pay-per-view. There's been a lot of shifting due to COVID, some cancellations, some movement. I'm actually excited that the certain fight got moved to the main card because I was actually looking for Schwan's opinion on this fight in particular. So without further ado, let's get right down into it. We open up on the main card with Jamie Mullarkey, 12-4, 26 years old, coming in against Kama Worthy, 16-7, 34 years old. These guys match up extremely well. Mullarkey has 3 inches height, but they have the same reach at 74 inch. Is there anything that you're taking away from looking at the tape here, Schwan?
I don't. Usually when I'm really looking at fights, I don't get so hung up on the tape, especially when I haven't seen either fighter really exploit certain advantages as far as like length and build. And I don't know that either one of them has really used that to impose their will in a fight.
Okay.
In my opinion.
I would say so. In certain aspects, especially somebody like Jamie Mullarkey, who seems to, you know, spam the takedown, make that a huge arsenal in his game plan, doesn't have the top control, doesn't have the wrestling that you really need or you would really like to see coupled with a game plan like spamming takedowns and not being able to strike from distance very well.
I don't know that he's a bad striker, even a bad wrestler. A lot of people aren't very technical in their wrestling. They're medium level. I know everybody's like, so-and-so can't wrestle. But usually the difference between it is physicality and athleticism. That's where Mullarkey has issues. He can perform basic takedowns fairly well. But the reason he can't take top control is, one, his technique isn't pristine. But even when you have pristine technique, when you're facing a much better athlete or much physically stronger athlete, it's hard to control positions. We've seen, Francis Ngannou couldn't wrestle at all against Steve Aiden and Miocic. He still got back up in moments. And based on his wrestling background, he should never be able to get back up. With Mullarkey, he has no athleticism to back up anything he does. There's lots of guys who are at his level as far as striking and grappling and wrestling, but they have athleticism that expands your margin for error. Mullarkey has very little margin for error. He's a half inch off position. You're gonna reverse him. If he's a half off position and landing that shot, it won't have as much effect. If he's a half off position and securing a submission, he can't finish it. Another guy horsepower through or force himself in. He doesn't have that option.
Right, and you know, so I look at their career records and seeing, you know, Mullarkey has lost both of his fights in the UFC by decision. And in his career, he does have 8 knockouts, 4 submissions, 1 decision. A lot of that coming on the regional scene where it's not as impressive based on his location. And the one thing that impressed me on tape was I did see him catch Riddell in the pocket with a nice counter left, and he really hurt him, was able to take the back. But as you said, that the athleticism just wasn't there. Riddell's able to pop back up to his feet, even tripodding and giving up his back. But, you know, Malarkey just can't even sink in a rear naked choke on a UFC level fighter, it seems. So in this matchup, to me, Kama Worthy, you know, he really has some pop. And if he's able to keep it standing using his athleticism to stuff the takedowns, and, you know, able to hit his counters like he's looking for. This isn't an Azaitar brother coming in with the big hooks and counters. I think he should be able to survive and maybe get a finish.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing about Worthy, obviously he has athleticism. Like, from my understanding of him, a lot of his training was kind of self-taught. He learned through trial and error, sparring and fighting. And even though I've done martial arts for years, the fact of the matter is I didn't learn in a classical manner. It was trial and error. Like, when I learned to grapple, I didn't actually learn. I just grappled with people until I started getting good at it. And for 6 or 7 months straight, it was getting slammed, getting choked, getting knee barred, arm barred, leg locked, ankle locked, just beat the hell up for 6 months straight. I couldn't do nothing. Then all of a sudden, I slowly started defending. Then I started getting out. Then I started reversing. Then I got to a position where I could threaten people. The bad part about that is, the good part is it develops a comfort. There's a sense. You learn all the little tricks about holding certain positions, grabbing your arm, using sweat to get out of certain positions. But you don't ever really develop a structured answer to questions. So if you're not, in my case, I'm not a high level athlete. So I make mistakes and I kind of work my way out of them. I can't explode out of them. I can't just throw you off. And technically I don't have the depth of skill to work my way through. Worthy does, but he has a comfort and an IQ. Everything he does is the right idea. The execution is not very good because I don't think he's ever been structurally built from the bottom to the top. It's like he's throwing the right combination, but it doesn't look quite sharp. He's going for the takedown, but the takedown's not really clean. He might do a reverse or an escape, but it's not. It's like, you're like, this shouldn't work. It's the right idea, but it shouldn't work, and it's only working because he's so dynamic, and that's what's going to separate him and Malarkey. If Malarkey makes a mistake, Worthy can just finish him. If Worthy makes a mistake, he can make 3, 4, maybe 5 or 6, and he can still win the fight. Malarkey almost has to fight a perfect fight to beat him, and I don't think he's technically capable of that because his kicks are width of skill. Malarkey doesn't have deep sets of skills. He has a wide range of skills. But he doesn't have any athleticism to force you in a position, and he doesn't have the skills to really consistently work his way out of positions.
Yeah. And at 34 years old, what we've seen of Kama Worthy is the best we're going to get of him. So we know exactly what he's good at and where he lacks. I think you're totally spot on there. In terms of a betting market, I mean, Kama Worthy -130 money line is not I really don't think that's terrible. I think if you want to take a stab at a crazy prop, I know you like the finish, but I think having to worry about the spamming of the takedowns and having to do that grappling, I think it could go the distance. Kama Worthy by decision +500. That seems like really high.
That makes some sense to me just because even though Malarkey's probably been outgunned in athleticism in his last two fights, because he's barely average as an athlete. I know I'm barely average as an athlete, so I recognize it. He's got enough width in his skill that it's hard to finish him. Both guys he fought had moments where they could have finished him, but he was able to survive because he can go from grappling to wrestling to wrestling to striking, striking to wrestling, wrestling to grappling. He can transition, not smoothly, but he has enough that it's hard to really overwhelm him and find that right shot. The only difference would be Worthy's such a good athlete, he might be able to force that through. But skill-wise, Malarkey should be able to navigate through a whole fight without being finished, in my opinion. He should be able to.
One huge problem I saw with Worthy is that he doesn't really move his feet a lot. He stays stationary when he's striking. And if you stand in front of a guy like Malarkey who just wants to spam takedowns, you're going to be right there for him. So I do. I think he's going to spend a lot of the fight really worried about trying to defend the grappling.
That's actually a really good point. And if you want to save yourself a little money, you know, the money line and kick out submission, because I don't think he's pulling one of those again. -105 by knockout or points. So this is a lower level fight. And, you know, it is probably safer to try to go for a better prop like you're looking at here with the +500. I can't find a problem with that. I might actually play that with you. So that should bring us right along to our next fight. I think we broke that one down pretty well. We have
a rebooking
and moved up onto the main card here. Miranda Maverick and Jillian Robertson. you know, I was looking forward to this one the last time out. I started out really heavy on Maverick. We gave a pretty nice breakdown on the physicality and what we could expect in some of the grappling and stand-up exchanges. And I come back to this fight now, and I see so many people on the Jillian Robertson side. And I just, looking at them last time at face-offs, I remember seeing that Maverick just looks so much stronger. And I think her wrestling background is being a little bit underrated here. So I'm very curious, you know, to see kind of what we're thinking here now.
Like, when I look at these fights, I look at them just, you know, as a journalist, analyst, but as somebody who's, like, worked with camps directly, and it's going to sound like I'm trying to make myself more important than it is, but it's just how I look at things. Everybody kind of looks at it like, how is the winner going to lose? And my thing is kind of the in-between, finding the context of how that win or loss is going to come about. Because the winner, there's fluke things that could happen, but there's certain trends that you follow. And with Jillian Robertson, she's actually not a bad technical fighter. Like, as a wrestler, she's very super technical. As a grappler, she's super technical. Mm. Even as a striker, she's not fluid or comfortable, but she's trying to be technical. The problem for her is when a fight goes past a certain pace, or when a fight gets to a certain amount of grit and conflict in it, as long as she can impose her will with her athleticism and her physicality and her wrestling and her grappling, she's never had a problem. Every person she's beat, she's been the better athlete than, she's been the far better wrestler, she's been the far better grappler. It's when she's faced somebody who she takes now, they can get back up, or she has to fight for the takedown. Or when she ties up with that person, she pushes them and they can push her back. That's when she starts breaking down. She has no defensive depth. And I think technically she knows it, but when I've coached fighters, I tell them, don't attack the technique, attack the character of the fighter. And I'll just use this quick example. Years ago, Frank Mir was fighting Brandon Vera, and Frank Mir had been working on his boxing, right? Brandon Vera comes out, throws a quick combination. Frank Mir, pop, 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 pop. Everybody's, ooh, he blocked it, slick. Brandon Vera throws another, he checks it, throws another combination. Frank Mir, boom, 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 real slick. But as the fight went on, Frank Mir started reverting back to who he is. And he's not that defensively sharp. He's not on his toes. He's not that quick reaction. And it's suppression. He started melting. And with Jillian Robertson against Maverick, I expect her to get takedowns. I don't expect her to maintain them. I don't expect her to control them. And Maverick's going to fight her at every range. And what happens to Jillian Robertson when people fight back, when they don't just concede to her? Every single time she folds. Unless you give her a wide open takedown or something, if you fight her and fight smart and meet her pressure with pressure back, she just starts folding every single time.
I think that Talia Santos fight is the epitome of that. I think you hit it. I think you hit the nail completely on the head. I mean, that's I think the tape is all over that. I mean, totally all over that. Like, you read it like a book.
The hard part about it is when you have a fighter like that, two things have to happen. Either mentally, three things. You can beat it into them to try and beat toughness into them. That doesn't work for everybody.
Nope.
Or mentally, they have to flip a switch. They just have to be able to do it. Nothing you can do about it. And the first thing that often is you do is you try to develop a layer of skills that allow them to slow the pace of the fight or give them automatic counters that help them from being in certain positions. Like, certain guys can't grapple, but they learn to scramble real well. But if you stick them on the ground on their back, they're finished. The scrambling is their way to make up for their poor grappling and the poor wrestling. Some people use footwork. They're defensively sound because they know they get overwhelmed, so they move and cut angles and pivot so that you don't have as many opportunities to force exchanges. I'm not quite sure what they're doing with her, and I'm not sure if it's just not a mental issue with her, but she doesn't have any way to slow fights down to regain control. She can fight. She just can't fight back is what it looks like. And at the level she wants to be at, if you can't fight back, you can't really make any headway in this division or the UFC.
I think one of the biggest problems is that the word is out. The jig is up. I think they know that that she's not comfortable in her striking, that she's not a dangerous striker. I think the word is out. So when the game plan becomes so clear cut, like you said, be physical, challenge her from every aspect, grind on her, make her work, you know, don't let her depend on her athleticism and her, you know, incredible grappling.
You
make it harder.
You make a very good point, because if she had competent striking, her wrestling would get so much better. When you know that she's wrestling out of desperation because she doesn't want to strike, or even when she's not being desperate, you know the minute you hit her, she's going to panic. It makes it really easy. The best example is I know people in her camp, or I know people connected to her camp. Before she fought Macy Barber, I'm like, Macy Barber in the mid-range is terrible. She can't box. If you can establish a jab, put combinations together, she'll be there early because she'll swing back. but she don't swing that good. She's not technical in that aspect. Anderson kind of didn't really explore that range. She kind of got desperate the minute she got clipped. And Anderson's a better athlete than Roxanne Modafferi. She's a comparable athlete to Grasso, but she couldn't get any work done there because she has no confidence. And the minute she experienced resistance, she kind of just let her build momentum and take her over. And it's like, that was a winnable fight. We saw what Modafferi could do once she got going, and Robertson never got going because the minute she got clipped. So it's very limiting. And I like her as a fighter. She has so many tools. She's got a look. She should be a star, and they keep giving her star opportunities, but she's never able to make the most of them. So if she loses to somebody like Maverick, well, now you're not just losing to upper echelon talent. You're losing to, like, unestablished talent. So then what do you do with her becomes the question.
Yeah, so the way I see it is we know Maverick is going for her master's, so we talk about the level of intelligence. She's doing that while she's fighting. And when you hear her in the interviews, she's just so smart. So I got to figure that she's going to be on the game plan where she's trying to stuff the takedown, keep it at range, and piecing her up. And I look at knockout or submission because, honestly, I think Maverick comes in as someone who has some tenacity, and she's looking to beat her at her own game. So if she clips her, she could actually look to sink in a choke on my estimation. I just like it inside the distance, plus 320 for Maverick. That, you know, for someone that could wilt under the pressure here, like we're saying, someone that's not as strong as Maverick, who actually has the reach advantage, even though she's a couple inches shorter, she has a 2-inch reach advantage. So from distance, it's not much, but that helps out even just the littlest a bit. And, you know, she has 6 submissions, 1 knockout, 3 decisions. She's shown much improved ability on the feet. I'm willing to take a chance on Maverick inside the distance here because, you know, the money line did get a little pushed out further to minus 172 this time. You could parlay her out, but if you're looking for a smaller play on a higher, higher payout, I'm looking inside the distance.
I think if you like inside the distance, maybe you should consider total rounds or will the fight go the distance? Because will the fight go the distance? No, plus 104. At least it covers you on both sides in case Maverick does get choked out. If you are totally on the Maverick by finish, I think you can really let go of the Maverick by finish and just go Maverick by KO because Jillian Robertson is good enough at grappling that she's going to be able to defend a rear naked choke, a guillotine, you know, whatever base, relatively basic choke that Maverick would catch her in.
Let me ask y'all a question since y'all focus a lot on the betting aspect. Like when you see a fighter who's had a trend like Robertson, like, and I don't know if people ask y'all just casually, like your opinion or professionally, when they really ask you, like, you know, what do you think? How do you really approach that when it becomes so clear that if this person gets, like, you know, 25% resistance, it's going downhill? Like, outside of all the skills and everything else, like, how do you not fall into a trend of just being like, I have to just go with this person. I have to go with whoever's fighting them because this person is so dependably undependable under in any adversity at all.
The fact that you asked that, I mean, brings us to the co-main event later, Tyron Woodley. I mean, to me, that's exactly who you're talking about. Somebody that is hard to bet, you could get the good value, but has just consistently keep letting you down. The short answer, I don't know. You lose a lot of money. It's tough. It's really tough. We depend on tape and talking, continuing to talk it out. I really like fleshing it out, you know, just continuing to break it down. It's all that you can do. And believe me, our sport has so much variance that, you know, we may even have the right side, but free KOs, you catch him in a random submission, eye pokes. I mean, one of my biggest bets of the year was on Peter Yan. I mean, he's winning that fight. We did all the work. We put in all the work, and you get played. So, you know, it's tough, man. It's really tough.
I just wonder because in a fight like this, like let's say Robertson just dominates Maverick. It doesn't really tell me anything because Maverick's still fairly inexperienced. And when you're inexperienced, there's certain pacing that you don't understand. There's certain moments you might let pass. So does it mean that Robinson's turned a corner or does it mean Maverick just isn't seasoned enough to take full advantage of the advantages she has? You know what I mean? It's very, it's just very hard moving forward if she beats her. I don't know that it tells me anything else about her that I didn't know before, you know?
It's so true. It's kind of almost a lose-lose spot for Jillian Robertson. She's risking her name and isn't really getting much in return here.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So for one of our featured fights here next, Sean O'Malley making his long-awaited return against Thomas Almeida, who actually made it the distance in his last fight against Jonathan Martinez. These guys, you know, O'Malley's going to come in with a 4-inch height, 2-inch reach advantage, 1.5-inch leg reach. You know, he's going to be looking to do the kicking on his end. Almeida also comes in with his own increased level of leg kicks in recent fights. And we saw what happens when you hit O'Malley in the legs. He does have very thin legs. He's a very tall guy for the division. And the real question is, you know, which guy is going to hold up? Because you have to figure this fight might be ended inside the distance.
It really comes to, I don't know what O'Malley's mentality is anymore. Like, I'm not quite sure what he's going for. I'm not quite sure his training situation, because I've said this about O'Malley before, and people always get on me about saying it, but I've said this years ago. I'm going to say it again. O'Malley's a guy who can fight. I don't know that he knows how to fight, because a lot of his success is based off his natural length, his agility, his power, his timing, his reactioning, his ability to see things. I don't know that he has technical answers to when things start going bad. Against Tarion Ware, Tarion Ware was a better athlete. He probably would have stopped him because he was having a hard time getting to Tarion Ware. He's a hard time getting away from counters. He had a hard time figuring him out. Now, he'll consistently fight back, but I don't know that he fights, I don't know that he makes reads correctly. Like, his reads are based off his physical advantages. And when those physical advantages are taken away or by pressure or because he can't scare a guy off and maintain the distance, all of a sudden the footwork isn't there, the defensive maneuvers aren't there, the poise isn't there, the accuracy, it all falls apart.
I was going to say, it's something that we saw earlier when we were scouting and talking about this fight. Sean O'Malley is a fantastic hammer. He's a terrible nail. And in this sport, you have to be able to be the hammer and be the nail. And he cannot be the nail. You've seen that. When he gets pressured, when he gets kicked to the leg, when he gets hurt, when he's getting out athleticized.
Out athleted.
Yeah.
when he's fighting a better athlete than him.
Yeah. You saw against that fight against who was that guy who fights with his hands low?
Eddie Wineland.
Wineland was pressuring him, and O'Malley didn't like it, and he was hitting him too. The difference is Wineland's chin has been so damaged that he has no margin for error. You clip him once, it's done. And that's essentially what happened. But O'Malley didn't make an adjustment. It was like, oh, the adjustment he made. He didn't make an adjustment. Wineland came in, hands down. Wineland's not a pressure fighter. When you're pressuring, it opens up to more counters, more leads. He's not used to being defensive in that manner while he's pressuring. So he was putting himself in the line of fire while he's applying this pressure. O'Malley made no adjustment. He just threw a strike as the guy was coming in. It's what you're supposed to do. There's no adjustment to that. But when he fought Vera, he couldn't scare Vera off. The high kicks, the flashiness. Vera is just a tough, gritty guy who's going to bite down and push forward. You have to really hit him with something to really scare him off. O'Malley couldn't, so he could never relieve the pressure. And he had no defensive answer for the leg kicks, no defensive answer for the pressure. He wasn't pivoting out. He wasn't angling out. He was just backing straight up. Almeida has the athleticism and enough striking skill as far as offensive weapons to do that. But the thing about it is Almeida doesn't have a way to close distance. His jabs, his fakes aren't really all that great. And his ability to take punishment, it's like he's not willing to take the punishment necessary to get to the spots he needs to get to. If he isn't willing to, yeah, it's like he's realized he's vulnerable and now he doesn't want to go for it anymore. If he goes for it, he has a chance. But if he's going to stay in range and let O'Malley get his momentum and find his rhythm, he's not going to beat O'Malley at range. He doesn't have the range. He doesn't have the game to. His only chance is to get into his spots. But he's not good at getting into those spots either. So
I think that Cody Garbrandt fight just changed him.
Yeah, it did. He'd always got hurt on the regional level, but he never got finished like that. And once you've been knocked out, you either double down or you get gun shy. And he tried to double down, but he had other knockout losses. He took a break, and even come back off the break, he's still gotten hurt a lot. So he's stuck in between. I want to be super aggressive, but I want to be technical. And he's not being successful at either one of them. What he should be doing is be like an educated brawler. I'm going to go all out pressure, but I'm going to make it deliberate. And I'm going to set it up. But he's kind of halfway in between. I'm trying to stay outside. I'm trying to get inside. You got to make a decision. You can't be indecisive against a guy like O'Malley. You have to be decisive. I'm going in, I'm staying out, and I'm going to live with whatever comes. And he's kind of oh, wait a minute. I got hit. Let me get back out. It's not going to work.
I was about to say a tentative fighter makes for easy prey for Sean O'Malley.
Yes. So, you got to make him work.
Yeah, and you're right. I don't know that he will, because initially looking at the line, I'm like, damn, how is O'Malley minus 340? Almeida plus 260. I might be playing the dog. And then guru over here slips me a wonderful idea yesterday. Why don't you share that idea?
I think I remember that idea. That idea was, I believe, oh, I think I remember. It was the, was it the round grouping?
I believe it was a decision prop that you were talking about, but are you back on a finish here?
You know what? Now I don't know. I think there's two ways. I don't want to talk both sides of the fence. You're fine. O'Malley round one or two plus 135. I think that's the most likely, and I really don't think that that's that bad. If you're trying to get a little spicy with it, O'Malley by decision plus 230. That's not bad either. I think that Almeida can hang around. You saw that versus Martinez. Problem is Martinez is, again, a relatively low output fighter, and you watched him get his block knocked off, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, not impressive when you look back on that loss, even though he made it the distance.
A low output fighter who's also not a dynamic athlete either.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there, like y'all said, there's a clear path to win if Almeida can hang in and really go in behind a tight guard and move his feet a little bit, because the tight guard isn't a problem. People cover up. It's they stand still, and as you stand still, then I can – body, in between the guard, uppercut. But if you move your feet, it's harder for me to work around your guard. If he can use his footwork to take angles to pressure him and stay on that leg kick and attack the body, because O'Malley's got a thin body too. I don't think he can take it to the body either. But that takes time. That takes a round or two of constant buy-in to that strategy, and you're risking being KO'd. I don't know that Almeida can take the shots necessary to do that, and I don't know that he's mentally willing to take that. Even if he can take it, I don't know if mentally he's willing to put himself in the line of fire to do the work necessary to win. Because even if he does it, he might still get KO'd, but you have to be willing to take the right approach. Like, I don't care win or lose. I want to see the fighter take the right approach to winning. That's what shows me progression. Winning and losing, I've seen guys win 10 fights in a row and not get any better. But I don't know that he's mentally able to flip that switch and say, okay, this is what I got to do. I'm going to do it. Because there's a path to the finale.
I think Almeida kind of was that guy. I mean, not to go back too far, but he was undefeated going against Cody Garbrandt, undefeated. So like you're saying, a guy that was continuing to win but maybe never got any better, gets his lights taken out by Cody and his earth is shattered, got knocked out by somebody 8-0, and then he can never truly improve. I was looking – he's only 29 years old. I feel like Thomas Almeida is 34, 35. Maybe it's because he's been around a while. Maybe it's because he's got a lot of pro fights. Maybe it's because the name is popular. I don't know what it is. He just seems older than 29.
Y'all like y'all both have watched basketball before. I always compare, like, when I see younger kids, like middle school or whatever, and you got a kid who's a little bit bigger and faster, he dominates for a certain period of time because he's bigger and faster. Then all of a sudden he gets to a certain level and he's getting his lunch taken, and mentally it just cracks him. And he doesn't have anything to fall back on, because during the time when he had the advantages, he should have been slowly matching his skills to the physical advantages, but they didn't. So now you're starting at ground zero when you least can afford it. Almeida is trying to be a better technical fighter after he's gotten to the highest level of fighting. You're supposed to have been doing that the whole time. So that when you can't just bowl people over, I can't just bowl this guy over. Well, my defense is extra sharp. My counters are extra sharp. If I get hit, I know how to respond to it. He didn't do any of that. So then when he started he couldn't run guys over, he had no answer. Once a guy figures him out, starts piecing him up, he does not have any answers. He can't reestablish distance. He doesn't jab his way in, doesn't jab his way out. He can't slip and counter and trap. He just gets in these exchanges and loses them. Or now he lowers his volume and avoids exchanges and still loses. But he has no real adjustment he makes within takedowns or tie-ups or clinches to really regain control of the fight. And it's ridiculous, considering this guy's supposed to be a Muay Thai type fighter, that he never uses any of these rest spots to regain his faculties and try to regain control of a fight. You never see him do it. It's weird.
He's not dominant. He's not elite. He doesn't have overtly aggressive. He's not overtly strong. I mean, he kicked my ass any day, every day, forever. You know, that being said, we're supposed to break down the fights that we have. There is no part of him that's really seemingly a better fighter than Sean O'Malley.
I'll put this. Both guys' camps, in my opinion, have failed them. O'Malley's a special elite talent, and his team has been riding off. His team made the mistake that all these teams make. They rely on his talent. Luckily for them, O'Malley is actually an elite talent. Most guys, like an Anthony Hernandez, he's from San Antonio. I'm from San Antonio. He's not elite talent, so he gets exposed at the high level. It's the same thing with Almeida. Almeida's a very good talent. He's not an elite one. his team rode on his talent the same way Junior DeSanto's old team rode on his. They didn't develop a second layer of skills or a first layer of skills in what he does. Striking, there's no defensive layer. There's no clean, consistent counter layer. It's all offense. It's all aggression. So once that's not good enough, he has nothing to fall back on. Well, if he's been with you for 5 or 10 years, why doesn't he have something to fall back on? Because you found success, and instead of adding on it to make him better, you just got content with it and figured it'd be enough to take him to a title, and it was not. And the same thing's happening to O'Malley. But in this fight, this is a showcase fight for O'Malley. If he loses, we have a big problem. If he wins, it tells us absolutely nothing about him.
That's a pretty great way to break it down. Sounds like we're all on O'Malley, and we'll break down, you know, exactly where we ended up on those props to recap later. But now, moving on to the co-main event, like we got a little preview into before, Tyron Woodley fighting for his UFC career, it seems, against Vicente Luque. Both guys coming in, you know, Woodley, same amount of fights overall in their pro records. Woodley 19-6-1. Luque actually 19-7-1. Very similar guys. They match up pretty well. Luque is going to be the taller and longer fighter, also younger by 9 years. Man, it just seems like they're setting Luque up just the same way they did Usman, Burns, Covington. And it seems like this is going to be the guy that really puts on the pace on the feet as opposed to the grappling pressure. And I don't know that Woodley's overhand right carries the same type of influence that it used to really be able to put out a guy that hasn't lost by knockout ever in his career. And I don't see Woodley going with the wrestling heavy game plan here.
Yeah, Woodley, that fight against Marquardt in Strikeforce, in his time in Strikeforce, it really changed his mentality. He used to be a guy who kind of goes for it and would get in exchanges and fight at a pace. And I think the last nail in the coffin was a loss to Rory McDonald when he just got outpaced and picked apart. Ever since then, Woodley has gone to a low output. I'm going to fight off the back foot. And people said backing yourself to the cage is a bad thing. It is a bad thing if you don't have Woodley's power and his willingness to fire off one or two shots. Because most guys, if you watch enough MMA, you go to enough camps, if you set a trap, most MMA fighters will fall into it. I sparred MMA fighters. I'm not saying they were going all out, but because I fight off the back foot, they think because I'm backing up, oh, I have them. And they'll walk into straight rights, body jabs, jabs, one-twos all the time because they're trying to close the distance. So all I have to do is fill the space with any sort of strike. They'll walk right into it. Throw a leg kick, they'll hit them because they're stepping in. I know they're stepping in. They can't help themselves. And when Woodley would back up to the fence, guys would come straight in on a line. All he has to throw a counter, throw a leg kick, done. He finishes guys. The problem now is Woodley still hits hard. He doesn't hit fast, and he can't pull the trigger as quickly. So that's why the power is not having the same effect, because instead of landing a sharp shot, he's landing a clubbing shot. So it's no longer effective. And the second thing is, he's always been a headhunter. For a guy who hits as hard as Woodley, you would think he kicks the legs a lot, but he doesn't. He only did it against Carlos Condit and like one or two other people. You would think he would attack the body a lot, but he doesn't. He's never really been a body puncher. And if you're a high-powered, low-volume guy with Woodley's power, imagine if he threw 5 or 6 full-power body shots around to somebody in the body. He crushed guys, but he never did it. What he did was he came up with a system to manage his energy because he has no faith that he can fight at pace. He uses wrestling intermittently because he can't wrestle a hard 2 rounds, much less a hard 1. It tires him out. So he came up with a system of fighting that exploited guys' bad footwork and their one-dimensional striking and their one-directional approach to fighting. Guys haven't had it figured out for years, but he was still athletically at his peak. But then he had a surgery, he started losing a step athletically, and it all fell apart. This is something that Luque should look at carefully when he's doing his fight style, because as dynamic as he is, he's got a one-note style too. He doesn't throw in clean combinations. Defensively, he's not hard to hit. He's not really great in getting into range. His whole game is built around his physicality, his durability, and his willingness to fire off full-powered punches. He doesn't change speed on them. He doesn't set them up very well. He's there to be hit by anybody who wants to hit him. It's just he can take a shot and you can't take his. So ultimately, he's going to give Woodley chances to win because he's going to be right in front of him. He's not going to switch into takedowns. He's not going to do all that. He's going to be striking. He'll be right there for Woodley to counter if Woodley can get it off. The problem is Woodley hasn't been able to pull the trigger in 4 fights in a row. And every time Woodley gets hit, it's like he doesn't want it anymore. Like he doesn't get hurt. He mentally is like, I don't want this. He'll exchange, you hit him with 1-2, now he's defensive. And you can't compete at any sort of competent level in mixed martial arts if you're unwilling, you're constantly trying to avoid exchanges at every turn, and you back yourself into corners. This team sabotaged him. They came up with a great plan, but they did not build any diversity among it. So now that it's not working, he doesn't have anything else to do. And they're telling him to do the opposite of what he's done for the past 10 years. Go forward. Take the initiative. You've been telling me for 7 years to stay back and counter.
Mm. Yeah, he was a classic counter fighter. I mean, not counting the Condit knee injury, he has 2 knockout finishes since 2014. I mean, what?
Yeah.
And we're talking about his knockout power? He choked out Darren Till. Big whoop. We know Darren Till's not a welterweight.
He did rock him, though. Yes. He did put him on again with that shot.
Darren Till's he's technical, but like relatively slow, there to be hit. I mean, I like Darren Till a lot personally. I think he's one of the most overrated fighters in the UFC, like probably bar none. Name one more overrated than Darren Till.
He's a world-class character, average fighter.
Yes. Well, very well said. The one thing with Woodley's past matchups is that, which you alluded to, is that everybody could threaten the takedown. Not that anybody, they all did at some point, but they all could threaten that takedown. And Luque's not going to do that. So is the fundamental game plan change enough for Woodley to feel comfortable, like throwing caution to the wind, saying, fuck it, going for it, going for glory?
Yeah, I'm not so sure, man. And if you just really think about, you know, like Schwann's saying, that mental shutdown, we saw him get hit by Burns in that first round, and it really wasn't that he was so much rocked and on the edge of, you know, being knocked out as much as he couldn't believe that he got caught by that shot, and he just couldn't take it at that point. I mean, you saw Burns isn't really the greatest of finishing threats because it's all about the one big shot. So if your chin can hold up to that, it's great. And, you know, Woodley was, you know, eventually able to even control some of the clinch and stuff. But, you know, Luque, I just think, has much more of a physical advantage in that aspect. He's not an undersized welterweight. He's going to come in aggressive, and he's going to be there to get hit. And that is something to look for, you know, when he faces a much higher level of competition. But, yeah, this is the UFC propping up Luque here. And at minus 260, it seems like the line, you know, it's getting closer and closer to playable. Some people are putting money on Woodley here, and you know, you could think about playing it straight if you want to put a big bet. You could think about, you know, playing, you know, maybe a little prop here. I think you had an idea.
Yeah, I don't think there's any money to be placed on Woodley. I just listen. If you wanna go around saying after the fight he somehow clips Luque. Oh, I called it. Yeah. All right, pal. Whatever. Luque's going to win here, and he's going to win by decision. I don't think that he will finish Woodley. I think Woodley will still have a lot to prove. I mean, he wasn't going to get finished in that Covington fight until he, you know, broke his rib. Luque by decision plus 135. I like it.
I wanted to highlight one point you made. A lot of Woodley's lack of knockouts is because people, if you notice, when guys fight other guys, they would throw more volume because everybody knows what Woodley's going to do. He's going to back up and try to line you up for one or two big shots. So people started working around that, being a little bit more busy or staying at a range. Like a Wonder Boy when he fought him. Wonder Boy got caught really only like maybe 5 times in the fight. But every time he got caught, he got hurt. Woodley used his power to scare guys off because Woodley used to always talk about, well, my defense, I don't get hit very much. His defense is terrible. But when a guy's afraid of that one shot you're throwing, they're very careful about what they throw. Now guys don't fear it anymore. And that's been the biggest problem. He can't scare anybody off. But Luque comes forward and he comes so hard. And to me, he doesn't set up his shots very well. There'll be opportunities for the entirety of 3 rounds. Woodley can be getting waxed for 2.5 rounds and then just close his eyes and throw as hard as he can. And if you're coming forward and he throws full speed, he could land something. He could rock Luque, and I think he could submit him on the ground. If Luque decided he was going to, for some reason, grapple or try something different, I feel that in bursts, Woodley can maybe grab a submission, maybe get on top and ground and pound. But when you're looking for a consistent line to victory, you're right. There is none. The guru is right. He has no consistent, predictable line that we can say, Woodley's going to do this to win. Because the things that it takes for him to win are things either there's a low percentage chance of it happening, or we've never seen Woodley do. We've never seen Woodley pressure somebody for 1 round, much less 2. We've never seen him wrestle hard for one round, much less two. We've never seen him throw body-head combinations for one round, much less two. So for me to say those things are viable is ridiculous because he's never done them. What's viable is the chance of him landing that big counter, but he just doesn't have the accuracy or the explosiveness anymore. And if he doesn't have that, I don't know how he wins this fight.
Very well said. Luque's so quick, man. He's so quick.
He's quick and he's tough. You can't just hit him with one shot and it's done.
Right.
You have to
that
really
Mike Perry him. Fight. That Mike Perry fight. Holy smokes, he's tough.
Yeah. That I mean, that could show you what would happen if you match his output. Like we saw that split decision, it was very close. But I don't think the output, like we keep saying, it's not going to get matched.
The Perry thing does make me feel a little bit better about Woodley's chances because Perry has declined a little bit as a fighter. But he's still more willing to throw punches, like y'all said. The activity is what helped that. And Woodley either – he might be active for a round, but he can't maintain that. And if he can't maintain it, as soon as he tires, it's all over.
Yeah, so that Guru decision prop, once again, I think I'm going to follow you on that. That sounds like a good time. But
yeah, it's taking the bookies are taking everybody's money this week, courtesy of me.
So, hey, let's move right along to the main event of the evening and talk about a rematch, talk about a fight that everyone's been talking about for a long time. And really this one gets my blood going even a little bit more so than the DC, like the trilogy fight. As much as I was like excited for that, I just feel like there's so much more potential for something crazy to happen in this fight.
DC was over the hill, man. I love DC, but he was, I don't know what his game plan was in that third fight. He didn't look great coming out of weigh-ins. I don't know what it was about that fight. I feel like the way the second one ended, it almost could have just been okay. But, you know, you always got to run the trilogy. I'm sure that's a hot button topic. That
a lot of that was just a money grab for DC and Stipe. As much as outside of fighting a boxer, that was the most money they could make in division was against one another because DC is fairly popular or people love him or hate him. Stipe, people are very meh about. Like, nobody really hates or likes Stipe. So he doesn't generate interest. He doesn't generate money. He needs guys who do that. Daniel Cormier was, as far as his bank account goes, was a godsend because he's a guy who could talk it up, make it interesting. The fact that Daniel knocked him out also made the fight more of a selling point, in my opinion.
100%. Oh my God, you can't even understand a word Stipe says. He's not selling anything.
Yeah, I used to know one of his trainers, a guy who was like his boxing trainer for a while, and I used to tell him, I'm like, I like your dude, man. And I've studied Stipe a lot. Like when he beat Werdum, I told everybody it's going to be a counter right hand. I told people that months before, weeks before. You can go through my Twitter, you'll find it. So when it happened, it was no shock to me. But I told him he is boring, dude. All he ever says is, and still, I'm going to do the same thing. It's another day in the office. That doesn't create interest. And people like say we're hating on Stipe just like they said they're hating on Demetrius Johnson. My thing is this. If you're in the fight and you're telling me it's another day in the office and it's no big deal, why the hell am I paying for it? What do you want me to do? You want me to pay for it and boost you up? You told me it's another day in the office. Well, I go to the office all the time. I don't want another day in the office. I'm spending my money elsewhere. Like, it's not a hate thing. The UFC gives you a platform, but stars are made on their own. These guys don't want to be stars. They want to get paid like stars. They do not want to be stars. And being a star is not about production. It's about grabbing the interest of the casual fan. And Stipe can't do it.
God.
So Daniel Cormier made him a lot of money. He should just, I don't care if he's sick of seeing his face. He made you a lot of money. Be thankful you got it because you wouldn't have made that with anybody else.
No. And so you talk about a guy that generates interest. And someone, I mean, he's out here doing the body shot challenges, letting people just rip him to the body on Instagram. He's out there, you know, with Teddy Atlas and, you know, making all these appearances. He does the documentary Ngannou on with Joe Rogan, telling his backstory, you know, talk about someone that's marketable. And so, I mean, I think it's pretty clear who the UFC wants to win this fight. And when you watch the first fight between Miocic and Ngannou, you just see someone that comes in. I mean, Ngannou comes in blown up. He looks just absolutely gigantic and not in a good way. You know, he's overblown in his muscles. And you can see immediately 2-3 minutes into the first round, he's gasping for air. He's throwing gigantic strikes. But, you know, it ends up being he can connect. Stipe is moving his head and able to just shoot for takedowns and ultimately hold him up against the cage, drain his energy. The Francis I see coming into this fight, definitely looks like he trimmed out a little bit, and he has much more MMA body than just like a bodybuilder. Am I seeing that right?
Yeah. The biggest thing in that first fight was like, one, just to touch this point real quick, Ngannou is what a star looks like. He's affable. He's funny. He's self-deprecating. He's just polite. He just wants to be a part of everything and everybody. That's what the UFC wants. That's the kind of guy we can build a division and really get to the next level as far as popularity with. But as far as his fight style, the problem with Ngannou is this. He's reduced to fighting in a very stupid manner because he has the ability to do so. He's got the physical tools to do so. He's like a Colin Kaepernick as a quarterback. Kaepernick never learned how to read coverages really well because he never had to. He could just tuck it and run. And the few times he had to make a tough throw, he had a cannon for an arm, so he didn't have to really set it up. He didn't have to make the right read. He could make any throw on the field athletically. Same thing with Ngannou. He'd been running guys over. His power had been too much. Nobody could stand up to it. So he had no reason to really push himself to develop an all-around skill set. And in regards to his team, I don't care what they tell you, they didn't have the right sparring for him. I guarantee you Ngannou is one of the biggest guys in the gym. He's probably the best athlete in the gym. And the thing about that is when you spar a guy and you train, you'll see guys and they'll say, well, I'll let you put me in this spot so I can work my way out of it. And the thing about it, the reason this doesn't work is because when you let a guy put you in a spot so you can work your way out of it, in the back of your mind, you know this guy could never get you in this spot. So you only try so hard to get out of it because you know he's not really a threat. It's like if I'm sparring somebody, they'll let me hit them. I'm not a big power puncher. So they'll work on the defense because if I crack them, they can roll with it. But in the back of their mind, they're not working on their defense. Unless they're a real professional, they're not working on it correctly because they know they can take whatever's coming from me. Same thing on that. I'm sure guys took him down. I'm sure guys pinned him. But it's guys who would never be able to get him in those positions. He didn't have to work his way out of them. He just did a technique, and with his athleticism, he was able to get out of it. When he faced a guy who could hold him in a position, when he had to work at a position, when he had to work to land strikes, he had no conditioning for it. It's like he'd never done it before. How are you that tired missing punches if you're sparring hard or sparring quality boxers? How is it that hard for you to get tired off a clinch if you face guys who can hold you in a clinch? How are you gassing on the ground if you face guys who can take you down and exert top control on you? Easy. You're not getting that sparring. It's the same problem OSP's had for years. It's why every time he faces a comparable athlete, he gets stomped because he's the best athlete in his gym. Ngannou has a skill set. He's a counter guy. He didn't try to counter against Stipe. He tried to run him over with shots. Why would you do that? Stipe's defense is actually his weakest point. When he's jabbing coming in, he's clean. But when he exits out, tries to exit on angle or pivot, his defense goes all to hell. That's how DC caught him. Are you telling me Ngannou couldn't have caught him with that same shot? He could have if he would have showed some poise and footwork and countered, but instead he came out there just trying to bomb him out because he wanted to live up to the hype. He bought into the narrative. His coaching staff bought into the narrative. I believe now he's actually worked on those things, and even though people are saying those four-round knockouts work against him, I think it might work in his favor because as far as we know, he hasn't improved. But what if he has? Stipe would be incredibly shocked if Ngannou goes for a takedown and gets him down. That would mind fuck him. And if he goes for a takedown on Ngannou and Ngannou sprawls him out and gets back up and can do that three or four times, mentally Stipe's done for. Because Stipe has a problem with athleticism. He has a problem with exiting pockets on exchanges. Ngannou's the best athlete, and he's devastating for guys who have egregious mistakes defensively.
Man, I love Stipe. I wanna be on Stipe. My heart says Stipe. His, like you said, when he leaves the grappling exchanges, the clinches, he's so there to be hit. His defense is such a problem. I mean, you see it in fights. You see it like against Roy Nelson. I mean, you see it early in his career. He just gets hit, and I mean, his toughness, that's great, but I don't know, man.
Let me ask you a question real quick. I know he won the last two against Cormier, but did anybody think like he looked like a half step slow or he wasn't taking shots as well as he used to?
Oh, man.
Because Cormier hurt him every single fight. Like early, Cormier was, I mean, I was like, how is this guy the best heavyweight? I mean, he's really getting beat up. And that second fight, it was like two rounds of him getting his ass kicked before he made the adjustment.
Yes, no, I'm in a complete agreement. I'm rewatching the third fight, the trilogy fight yesterday, And I say, oh my, like he almost gets dropped in the first round against DC. He uses the fence to kind of catch him. And I know it doesn't count as a knockdown, but yeah, that's troubling because he used to be able to take those shots a lot better. So, you know, I started off like, oh my God, I got to get Stipe at plus money. I got to make sure he stays at plus money. I'm going to make sure I'm going to put a huge bet out on him. And the more I keep thinking about this, I mean, you talk about making adjustments and everything. This guy is out there at Extreme Couture now. You know, he was fighting out at MMA Factory in Paris, his first fight. Now he's been with Niksic at Extreme Couture. Talk about getting in sparring partners, bringing in the big bodies. He's been with Sergey Spivak out there. I saw them training together, you know. So now you get this tactician. Niksic's been watching their first fight every single day, breaking down what happened. And you think that Niksic isn't going to be able to get Ngannou, who – listen, this is a cerebral guy. He's so intelligent. He's so smart. And I think, like you said, those four first-round knockouts in a row is kind of lulling the public to sleep as this line keeps on creeping to even. I'm just going to keep waiting and throw, I think, a pretty big bet on the Francis money line here.
Yeah, I keep wondering. The fight Stipe fought against him was probably the most perfect fight. He dominated. But even in that domination, every time Ngannou hurt him, even with grazing shots, he was visibly hurt. I don't know that he can take those shots. And if Ngannou can defend even one takedown or Ngannou can get back up quicker, that fight turns dramatically. Yeah. And Ngannou carried his power from round one to round five. I know Stipe has a clear avenue to victory. I don't know, A, even if Ngannou hasn't improved, that he can execute that as well. I don't think he's as durable anymore. I don't think he can fight at the same pace anymore. He was tired of the fight too. Everybody's like, Ngannou was gasping for air. Stipe was dead tired too. Did y'all not remember that part? He was gassed too. He dominated the fight and he was dead tired.
Yeah, ref kept on telling him to work, do action. He's just sitting on top of him along the fence for as long as he possibly can without doing anything. You're right.
Exactly. So what if Ngannou has just one quick, he pivots, turns him against the fence and unloads. That's all it takes. We know if he gets it clean, it's done. That's what makes it so difficult. Stipe could be winning every – it's like watching a Derrick Lewis fight. Stipe could be winning every second, and then the half second he gets cracked, and it's over.
Well, so that's – I does raise a couple interesting points. I feel like sometimes when we try to break down these fights, I feel like we have to – maybe within an Ngannou fight it's almost impossible. But I feel like you kind of have to take the freak KO out of it. And if you take the freak KO out of it, what do you get? And – I get really worried because you're saying to me, oh, you know, at any point with like Derek Lewis. Well, we've seen Derek Lewis get late round knockouts, finishing Volkov in the last second of round three. I haven't seen Ngannou finish anybody after really round one, other than I guess the doctor stoppage versus Blades the first time, Luis Henrique by knockout in round two. I mean, after that round one, I don't know. And then my second question is this. Yes, you can defend the takedowns. Yes, you can spend 3 years with those giant biceps working those underhooks, working those, you know, digging to stay upright. Stipe is a lifelong wrestler. So 3 years of technical training might not be enough to weather against somebody that's spent their life doing something. It may not be still enough technique. And
I have an interesting counterpoint to that. Stipe is an established boxer. True. Golden Gloves boxer. He's boxed for a long time, right? His camp has boxers. He's known as one of the better MMA boxers pretty much in history.
True.
Knowing that, how did you allow Daniel Cormier to get in the pocket? Why did you rush into the pocket instead of staying on the outside, jabbing and leg kicking him? That's just basic boxing, using your limb. And second of all, how did it take you 4.5 rounds to figure out to touch Daniel Cormier to the body? As skilled as Stipe is, he fights dumb as fuck sometimes.
Yikes.
He fights some of the dumbest fights I have ever seen a guy with his skill set. He can do almost anything, and he'll just, I'm just going to brawl this time. I'm just going to wrestle. What are you doing? What are you doing? So like, what if he comes out? What if he comes out dumb? We can't say we haven't seen Stipe fight dumb in the biggest events. That's how he got dropped by Alistair Overeem. He tried to walk right over him. It's not impossible. That's how he got knocked out by Dan Cormier. Instead of staying outside and chopping him up like he did late in the second fight and then tried to do in the third fight, he was trying to run him over. Why? I don't know. But that's what makes it so hard. Stipe is not a George St. Pierre type, clean, crisp, I'm going to make it a picturesque type fighter. And even though he dominated that first fight, I feel like Francis Ngannou has either gotten better athletically or stayed at the same level. I don't know that Stipe has. Right. He's been in wars in every single fight. He went five rounds with Ngannou. Even the fight with Alistair for the short period of time was a tough fight. A lot of his fights have been punishing, grueling fights.
Yeah.
That takes something out of you. At his age, with that much activity, I don't know. I don't know what to say. Yeah. I just don't know.
My other thought is...
Last counterpoint.
All right. I like this.
So my thought is, last one, is it possible that like a little phantom Ngannou from like the Lewis fight comes out? Because now he goes out there and he's thinking about the takedown. He knows from the first time he can't overswing, because the second he does, he's given up a clinch to go to the ground. Is it possible he spends his time too tentative?
That's actually possible. But if he's more tentative, I would like that. If he's more of a, I'm going to let him lead and show me his hand and counter him, I would like him to do that. I like more than him running face first. He runs face first, takedowns there. He stands at a distance and makes Stipe have to walk his way in. Stipe does the work for him. He doesn't have to gauge the distance. Stipe comes in, body, head, KO. Or shoot for a takedown yourself.
Yeah.
I'd rather him be on the counter.
Yeah.
I'd rather him be on the
floor. That's actually interesting, because I think the stylistic matchup of Lewis is also a guy who's always on the back foot looking to counter. So I think that's kind of what drew out that ugly matchup. Plus, it was off of Ngannou's first loss in the UFC. He was extremely cautious and didn't want to get put in those same positions, and respecting the power. Other thought is that Stipe actually, you know, his last few fights here with DC, he came in the best shape of his life. He dropped a few pounds down to the 230 range, but a lot of his success when he was against Ngannou came in the 240 range. And I think the biggest problem is, for him to be able to be as quick as he was in the first Ngannou fight, he had to lose that weight. But for him to be able, as strong as he needs to be, to hold him in those positions and take those shots, he needs to be in the 240 range. So he's actually, I think he's in a little bit of a dilemma. He might come in somewhere in the middle, maybe right at 240 instead of 235 or 245. But I think, you know, we're talking about those physical downgrades, as, you know, now Stipe's 38, not 35 anymore. And Ngannou, you know, he's taking his lumps in the UFC now. So I think this actually ends up being one of my bigger plays. I'm pretty sure I end up on Ngannou. Just, I mean, the knockout's minus 105. The money line's minus 128. If you want to play the knockout, I just suggest you put like a dollar on the Ngannou by points and by submission, because it's plus 2,000 and plus 3,400. So at least in the crazy case, you put $100 or something on like the knockout, and then, you know, you're like, all right, well, let me get 20 back just in case some crazy shit happens. But
I'll make a bet right now. If Ngannou wins by submission, Twitter will shut down. MMA Twitter will be like, if he wins by a triangle, could you imagine that?
Oh, my God.
You got a triangle by Francis Ngannou?
Oh, like, my God.
You have to retire, dude. Get out.
I don't even know if those thick legs would be able to get in that position, is the fun.
I'll tell you this much. If Stipe gets submitted by him, his whole run as a heavyweight champion is thrown in the trash. I'm like, garbage, dude. You got submitted by Ngannou. That's like getting submitted by, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
dude, no, you're definitely right. Yeah, save your dollar, actually. Let's take that back.
So what that makes me wonder, and maybe you guys will help me answer this question, if Francis wins, do they run it back for a third time? Or does that maybe matter, like, how? Like, if he starches him in the first or second round, maybe Stipe just calls it quits. But, like, if Francis wins, I feel like it's hard not to run a trilogy.
Yeah, I think if it's competitive, they would have to, as long as Stipe doesn't just want to retire. But as we're talking about here, a trilogy means another big fat paycheck, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stipe was trying to go into the boxing route. I really think he's on his way out, and he's just trying to make as much money as possible. So, I mean, the trilogy would make sense, but if Ngannou wins, man, I don't know. I think Stipe would be another year removed. Most likely, he'd be coming off of a big KO loss. Man, it'd be tough, dude.
Yeah,
it'd be tough. If Ngannou knocked down the first round, what argument do we have for a trilogy? Like, dude, you took five rounds to beat him by decision. He just wiped the floor with you. What are we saying here?
So if Stipe wins, like, what happens? He fights Jones?
I would guess that'd be a big money payday.
Yeah.
A fight he thinks he can win, big money payday. Yeah, but I don't think he would retire. I don't think. I think Jones would be the one he'd try to go for. And then after that, maybe he'd consider retirement. But he's got to be close to retirement at this point.
And you're right. He was talking about that boxing stuff this week. You know, he was like, oh, I'm more interested in Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua than facing John Jones. And yeah, you're right. Like, where's his mind at as far as looking forward? Is he really like, could this be the retirement fight if it goes really badly?
I think so. I mean, I don't think he'll be mentally broken. I just think he's kind of done with it. He's faced everybody in the heavyweight division. He's beaten them. Mm-hmm. You go into these rematches, all you're doing is giving guys a chance you've already beat to beat you again. What's an interesting fight in the heavyweight division? What's the fight, if he wins outside of Jones, what's an interesting fight that makes him real money? I can't think of any. Fighting Overeem again? No. I mean, DeSantis is gone. Who's going to fight?
Overeem's gone too.
Yeah. I mean,
there's literally nobody. This is the biggest, baddest, craziest rematch. If he beats Ngannou again, I mean, right now he's the best heavyweight fighter of all time. I mean, he beats Ngannou again, you can write that in granite. He will be the best heavyweight fighter of all time, period. I think if he beats Ngannou again, he's better than Fedor. I mean, he is the best heavyweight fighter ever if he beats Ngannou again.
I would say best level of competition. Skill-wise, I still think Fedor is just so good.
Oh, woo! Yeah. I could definitely hear all those arguments, and we could probably spend the rest of the night talking about greatest of all time and stuff. But listen, let's just do a quick rundown once again, just in case you missed our picks in the middle. It's looking for me like, you know, I might keep it just to the worthy money line as a small bet, but look at the decision if I want to get a little saucy. Miranda Maverick, actually, now I'm seeing -168. Line might be moving a little. Wait, see if you can get it below -150 and hammer that money line. If not, I'm looking inside the distance. Sean O'Malley, we're going to take a long shot prop on the decision. I think that's what I'm going to do because I don't feel comfortable laying big money on O'Malley. Luque, let's say decision. And Ngannou, I'm just playing straight up. I guess you could do the knockout if you want to save a couple bucks, but I think the line might move a tiny bit more. So what about you, Guru? What's your final rundown here?
Final rundown. I do like Worthy by I like Worthy money line. I like Worthy by decision. I like Maverick. I like Maverick possibly by knockout. I like Sean O'Malley round one or two. I think it might take more than one round, but I do think that he can eventually get the finish. I do think that a decision is possible. Honestly, at +230, I honestly wanted a little bit more juice, would have liked a little bit more juice, but that's not terrible. I'm on Luque by decision. I think that's the big play, or you can parlay Luque. I have a pretty drunk parlay, Luque and Maverick. So I have to deal with that from my Adesanya losses. I was acting a little reckless. But I actually ended up was drunk and put it on Derek Brunson too. So maybe I go 2-for-2 in that drunk sadness.
Crossing my fingers for you.
And honestly, for the main event, I am so conflicted. I mean, it's eating at me. I'm very upset. I don't know. I probably will end up circling Ngannou. And betting on Ngannou. If Stipe wins and I pick Ngannou, I will never forgive myself ever. That's not the way you bet. That's not the right way to do it. If he wins, I will never forgive myself.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes that it's all a game of chance, it's all a game of risk, and let's leave it off at that. I think we have some good picks, and maybe you'll see a little bit more at the weigh-in that'll make you feel something either way.
Hey, I just want to tell you, you guys have a really good eye for the sport. Like I deal with coaches, I deal with camps. Some of the things y'all are picking up, actual paid coaches do not pick up. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. I can't show you messages. I can't show you text messages. I know for a fact, I have talked to coaches, and some of the stuff y'all picked up, over their head. And they're getting paid thousands of dollars to figure this out, and they're missing it by a mile. So you guys are actually really have really good eyes for it. You clearly do a lot of film work and actually understand what you're looking at. Take my word for it. A lot of these coaches are stealing money. Just take my word for it. I appreciate your eye for it. I appreciate your patience in doing the film work. Sometimes when people do betting lines, it's just kind of like they go with the obvious trends and you're like, dude, this is something you read out in an article. I can tell y'all actually watch fights backwards, forwards, forwards, backwards, and really try to see what's going on and really try to get a bigger picture and a more specific picture. And I appreciate that. I like having people I can talk to, because usually on the show I'm on, the MMA Ratings podcast, we usually talk to a lot of coaches, and they like talking to me because I know what I'm talking about. I like talking to people who like know what they're talking about, and most podcast hosts and most fans just have no idea what they're seeing. So I appreciate you guys greatly. Thank you very much for letting me be on the show. It was an honor and a pleasure. I'll come on anytime you want.
I can't tell you how much that means hearing that and just like pouring, you know, my soul into the research here and really getting into following this sport and having someone like you, you know, give a compliment like that, Matt. Really appreciate it. I'm so happy you came on and reached out. This worked out great.
Yeah, really, really means a lot. It was a pleasure meeting you. A bright guy, a very sweet guy, a nice guy. I mean, really, real pleasure to get to know you here and to get to have
my mom will take that very well. My mom won't like that comment. She thinks I'm very nice, so I'll tell her she'll be
please do because
listen, anytime you want to come back on this pod, you are more than welcome. You are Chronic Combat Conversation family, and anytime you may need a guest spot from somebody, feel free to give us a little tag team, and we'd be more than happy to jump in for that for you. I'll speak for me. I would be more than happy to jump in.
Yeah, definitely.
I just have to once again mention our podcast because my podcast host, I told him I would mention it.
Of course.
MMA Ratings podcast, me and my podcast host, Rafael Garcia, we kind of do something like this. It's a lot more me kind of yammering and him trying to whip me back into shape because I get real reckless on that show. I get real reckless. I try to keep polite because I don't know what's going on, but I get real reckless because some of these fighters I know and I'm like, no, that's bullshit. I know that doesn't work.
I love it.
I want to be respectful and intelligent in a more direct Schwan.
I love it. You were fantastic. So
Thank you very much.
I couldn't have imagined this going any better. I was a little nervous earlier just because it's, you know, it's a little anxiety ridden, you know, whatever. But this couldn't have gone any better.
I appreciate it, guys.
Please make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Throw our videos a like and a subscription. Go to Apple Podcasts if you use Apple. 5-star review. Subscribe. We are now up and rolling on Google Play. So for you Android users, if you like to listen to podcasts through Google Play, we are now up on Google Play. Please go like and subscribe us on there. You can follow us on Chronic Combat Conversations on Instagram, at Chronic Combat on Twitter. You can follow my awesome partner at TB Scouting MMA on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. And I am the_MMA guru at, you know, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. We got big homie Schwan in the building. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll check you actually in 2 weeks because we get a little week off after this. Much needed. Take care, everybody. Be safe.